This July 4th weekend, celebrate your health independence with our Independence Day sale at my supplement dispensary. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, July 4th through 7th. Get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. We're now part of the FullScript Network, the safest and most convenient way to purchase supplements. Declare your independence from high prices and substandard quality. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for 10% off and free shipping from July 4th through 7th. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Tru Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. Tru Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. Tru Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, Tru Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. Tru Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for Tru Niagen Pro. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is one of my favorite times of the week where I get to bat around questions with our nutritionist in residence, who is Layla Mutin. Hi, Layla. How are you?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. And so as we celebrate the 4th of July, Independence Day.
Yeah.
I have an article about grilling, which I thought was apropos to put up there for people who are out there. I'll be doing a lot of grilling. That is, I am the grill meister, and there are going to be like a lot of guests at my house, so I'm going to be very busy.
It's fun to be the grill meister.
Right.
Master.
I'm also the person who takes everything to the town dump. You know, so I have I have well-defined roles in the household.
We go to the dump. Yeah.
And it's kind of a, you know, it's a whole sort of social scene there. You know, the idea is, you know, you don't make a lot of conversation, but you kind of nod politely and good morning and how are you doing and make eye contact. It's a little bit of a social scene. It's important to not overdress for the dump, though. You have to wear like a kind of a stained T-shirt and some ragged Bermuda shorts.
And take your gloves. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Go through all your recyclables and all that kind of thing. Make sure you've got your yellow bags.
Right.
Oh.
So apropos of germs, it's a good segue because I got a story for us that we can start today off with. Surprising story. Banned antibacterial tied to osteoporosis.
Wow.
Would it surprise you that triclosan is even worse than we thought? The antibacterial chemical triclosan was tied to deleterious bone changes in women, according to researchers in China. Right, you know, sometimes they do pretty good epidemiological research in China. You know, they have good research scientists. Look at 1,800 adult women. High exposure to triclosan was associated with nearly 2.5 times increased chance of developing something called intertrochanteric osteoporosis. So that's a part of the femur. The leg bone, which I believe is, you know, the part that is associated with risk for bone fracture. It's an endocrine disrupting chemical. They don't exactly know why that should be, you know, but it has been commonly used in soap, mouthwash, hand sanitizers.
Yes, anything marked antibacterial has some triclosan.
It was only banned in April of this year.
Yeah.
It was banned in over-the-counter soaps and in 2016, and then hand sanitizers later in April 2016.
Yeah.
But despite the current ban, the chemical may still be found in other daily products not regulated by the FDA, such as clothing, athletic wear.
Really?
Yeah.
Triclosan?
Right.
I thought they were just using silver and
copper. It's like, here,
copper.
Suck on my shorts. You know, it's like, why would you put triclosan? I guess it's because it's like an anti-sweat thing. Your sweat doesn't smell bad. So you get triclosan in there. It's treated so you don't have a smelly...
Yeah, because it kills the bacteria.
Smelly gym clothes, which we use white vinegar. You know, white vinegar is a way to kind of get the bad smells out of...
Yeah.
It's
a good cleaning product, too.
The smells linger, but white vinegar, we always keep a little bit of... It's very inexpensive. You get it in the cleaning section. It's not culinary vinegar.
Right. It's the cleaning, the big gallon
vinegar. You know, I mean... Again, why were we doing this? I mean, bad idea. It messes up the microbiome. It gets into the environment.
Yes.
Did you say that there was evidence is carcinogenic?
It's carcinogenic,
okay.
Yeah.
I
believe according to Environmental Working Group. So it's good that it's banned. These antibacterial agents, speaking about yeast again, we were talking about...
And then
about,
there's the whole hygiene hypothesis that, you know, maybe it's not bad to be exposed to some germs here and there because live in a completely sheltered environment, what happens when a real germ comes along?
Exactly. And all these antibacterial products, if they're winding up, you know, in our gray water, in our black water, in our septic systems, they're destroying the bacteria that would otherwise keep that septic system healthy and degrading.
Yeah.
But all these antibacterial agents are messing.
That's the principle of a cesspool. It's kind of like it has to have a microbiome.
Right.
I've actually seen, you know, they in the hardware store, they have like probiotics for your cesspool.
Yeah. Like a Santa Flush or I don't know what if that's the one. But
so don't put too much disinfectant in your cesspool.
Exactly. Don't do that. You
it's
want
like
those.
Like if you have a compost heap and you put like automotive... You know, antifreeze or something on top of it, you know, like
you're just killing off everything.
You kill off the beneficial bacteria that help to compost.
Yes.
And you won't break things
down.
And
you're harming the soil, too. So, Yeah. No. It's a good thing it's banned. I'm just sorry it's taken this long.
Yeah. Well.
But tied to osteoporosis, that's very interesting. And I think I think it's more than a theory at this point. Is our use of fluoride in the water competing with iodine?
Right. And this whole theory that it's in that category in the periodic table, and the chlorine and the fluoride are they're halogens, and they actually can interfere with iodine. So,
and possibly contributing to hypothyroidism if we're not getting the requisite iodine because the fluoride competes with it. Wins. Interesting stuff. Yeah. Don't use any antibacterial products. Anything that says antibacterial, put it back. I've never used a hand sanitizer. I don't even know what that stuff feels like.
Wow.
So, you know, I go wash my hands.
The last time I got hand sanitizers, we went down to Mexico. And we were really concerned about getting, you know, that turista thing.
And so we bought all this hand sanitizer.
So we have like I barely used it.
Oh, I think I used it once. I think it was in the bathroom on the Hampton Jitney. I was there's no running water here. And I'm looking around.
A good place. It's advisable.
I said, this is it. Okay. Of course.
Yeah.
But I came out and I was like, can't wait to get there and wash my
hands. High class germs on the Hampton Jitney. It's like.
I go to the North Fork.
Oh, then they're not so high class.
Not so high class. We're still country bumpkins.
Middlebrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, enough inside baseball here. Let's get to questions.
We have a question from Rona. Do you have a suggestion to help my 2 and 4 year old grandkids with their tendency to catch frequent colds and viruses?
Yes, make them use hand wipes.
Go use some triclosan. No.
And mouthwash.
And mouthwash
spray,
and all that stuff.
Spray the receiver of their, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say, spray the receiver of the phone. What am I talking about?
Like, I don't know.
Like
maybe you were thinking of Lysol.
In the 20th century.
Yeah. That's, you were thinking
when
of Lysol.
When we used to have phones, and we still do in the office, you know, people like spray the receiver with Lysol. But what do you do? They've done a study on these phones, which is actually, I'm using an iPhone right now to record this podcast. And they're very germy. And fact, they tested nursing students. And the nursing students come in contact with patients. And 40% of the phones had staph that was potentially dangerous to patients. So you can tell people that wash your hands. But who can refrain from looking at a cell phone for more than a minute?
That's true.
Especially if you're a young woman or a young man. Because
people
are
taking their cell
nurses.
Phones into the toilet.
Right.
So I'm sure it's riddled with E. coli, too.
And the medical personnel, as much as you tell them to wash their hands, they're not going to wash their phone.
Right, right. But those need to be cleaned properly. I'm not sure vinegar is the right solution for that, but it could be. I'm not sure, but still. So with your grandkids, Rona, your 2 and your 4-year-old.
Joking. Don't
use antibacterial. Right. We don't. But hand washing, according to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, you can reduce your chances of cold and flu by 50% if you simply hand wash properly.
Right.
And kids are notorious for having sticky, jammy hands.
Yeah.
Especially 2-year-olds, 4-year-olds.
Yeah.
So, but, which Rona's inquiring about what supplements might be helpful.
Okay, well,
especially chewable liquid.
I just did an interview with the author of a textbook on pediatrics. And, you know, the question I posed to her, a fairly reasonable question, is, do you think that all kids should take a supplement? Must kids take a multiple vitamin or chewable, you know, like a gummy bear or something like that? And she said no. Do they need supplemental calcium? She said no. But, you know, the two things that are most important for kids to take, in my opinion, are vitamin D.
Yeah.
And maybe omega-3s.
Yeah.
Especially a DHA-rich one, because it seems to be helpful for brain and concentration and, you know,
eyes,
mood.
Yeah.
But vitamin D. But if a kid is sick all the time, you can give them small amounts of vitamin C, and zinc especially, I think, would be helpful.
Yes. They could take a zinc lozenge, a chewable.
The other thing it can do is just to kind of wash the germs out, give them clear nasal spray, which actually helps to, like, float out some of the viruses.
I'm not sure how amenable a 2-year-old might
do,
be
they
to
do,
that.
No, they don't. They don't have to do it. You can just put it in the back of their nose. It's easy to do that. They just say, here's your nose drops. They don't even have to know how to, you know, inhale it. They're kids products. It's from a company called Clear, X-L-E-A-R. And they have kitty products for that. So, you know, those are some simple suggestions. I mean, there are children's echinacea, things like that. You can't take that all the time, but if a kid comes down with that, some of these natural remedies are useful.
Do you remember Flintstones vitamins? I was given Flintstones vitamins.
Oh, that explains a lot. Was that your introduction to nutrition?
I think so. I'm like, where's Betty? Where's Wilma? Dino. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to give kids chewable vitamins because it wears away the enamel of your teeth, especially vitamin C chewable. It doesn't make sense because it damages the tooth surface. So, you know, and plus the chewables just, they can't have too much vitamins in them because they would just taste horrible. So they're usually very low in vitamin levels. Zinc, you know, maybe for a small child, you know, a 5-year-old, maybe 15, 20 is okay. You know, a little zinc is good for immune support.
Right.
And they don't get much zinc because if they're very picky eaters, they're not getting a wide variety of nutrients in their foods.
So that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Liquid vitamins as well. They're pleasant flavored.
There are different kinds.
Yeah, there are different kinds. Now is a nice brand, NOW. It's not bad.
Specifically, they have a children's formula?
I think they have a children's formula that might be nice.
Is it a powder
sweetie
that's reconstituted?
I don't know, but I believe it's stevia flavored.
Oh, okay.
At least, or even fructose flavored, which is okay if you're only taking a teaspoon.
Okay.
Or a tablespoon or so. It's not like drinking a big glass of juice.
Okay. A spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down?
Yeah, or something like that. The vitamins go down.
Make the vitamin go down.
Yeah. Rona, thank you for your question. Oh, this comes from Michael.
Oh, let's pause for a message from one of our sponsors. Let's allow our sponsors to share this vital message with you. Here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3 clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And you want to maintain that access, so support our sponsors. So what's our next question? I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no. It's from Michael. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I heard a brief talk from Dr. Jonathan Wright, who especially developed novel methods for hormone replacement. We know all of that.
But I consider him truly one of my mentors, because when I was just getting into this field 30 years ago, he was a well-established physician. And he was just
for the bioidenticals
brilliant.
And all
and
that,
he,
right?
And he and Alan Gaby produced wonderful and entertaining tape series. I mean, people think we have a fun repartee. They had a great repartee.
Oh, wow.
And they presented all this nutritional information. And in the days when there were cassette tapes, I had all their cassettes. They came in like little books, and you pulled out, you know, a series of cassettes. And it would be courses on nutrition. And I would plug that into my car cassette because I had to commute to medical school. And if I got stuck in traffic, it was like, okay, I missed the morning lecture, but at least I got a great nutrition lecture.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Wow. You were before your time, getting nutrition lectures before they were in medical school.
Yep.
Even.
Yep.
Right? So Jonathan Wright says, one of the best non-tech ways to drop the potential incidence of developing heart disease is to just give blood several times a year. What do you think of that? Do you agree with this point of view?
Well, you know, I think you can make a universal recommendation for that. I do make that recommendation for my patients based on their levels of blood levels of especially ferritin. And ferritin is a pretty sensitive marker of iron overload. But we saw this very interesting patient the other day. He had a high ferritin, and we just simply changed his diet. He lost weight. He got an excellent diet. And his ferritin went from like 300 plus to 190.
Yeah.
Now,
that was amazing.
So I said, so what? Oh, did you get into a fight? Did you
lose
a night
blood?
Fight? You know, did you a hemorrhage or something? And he said, of course not. And I said, this is an example of ferritin being a marker of inflammation.
Yeah.
So you can't really rely on ferritin entirely. There are tests for hereditary iron overload.
The HFE.
HFE gene, right? We use in a comprehensive genetic panel. We can spot that, and we can see if people are at risk. But
for hemochromatosis,
having the gene doesn't necessarily mean you will have it.
Yeah.
It's sort of a predisposition.
Yeah.
And then you have to measure the iron in this ferritin.
Mm-hmm.
But for those people, giving blood is a great thing. It's an altruistic thing. I think for most people, giving blood is an act of generosity, and it's probably health preserving. But the one population where I wouldn't do that is in premenopausal women, because we see so many of them who are actually iron
anemic
deficient.
Or borderline or something.
Right, and that's actually thought to be one of the reasons why they're somewhat spared cardiovascular risk.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little simplistic to say that if men could just, you know, have periods, they wouldn't have cardiovascular risk. You know, or give blood all the time, they would be on a par with women.
Yeah. So those who have a much higher ferritin or that gene possibly, or a diagnosis of hemochromatosis, they go for, you know, give blood. That's one of the best ways. You know, 2 to 4 times a year, right? That would be the suggested amount.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I took a year off from college, and it was like a backpacking trip through Europe, which is very fashionable in like around 1969, which is like the summer of love. You know, we traveled all around, and I saved up like $300 over the summer or something.
That was a lot of money in 1969.
Right, and so it pretty much ran out of that pretty quickly. So in order to you know, not have to call my parents, send me more money. I would give blood.
There you go.
And, you know, we'd
you go got for, paid for plasma.
And if you're in, if you're in a one country, they have records. You know, they say, well, oh, you know, you just gave blood last month. You have to wait 3 months, which is reasonable because you can keep.
You have to make
blood.
You red blood cells.
Yeah, it takes a while. So we would go from country to country and be like, oh, I get blood in France, and I get blood in Greece, and I get blood in Spain, and like.
And which country did you faint in from giving all that blood?
It's like, what did we know? We were like, you know, 18, 19, 20, you know, yeah. Like, what does it matter?
You were invincible then anyway.
Right.
So, at that age. Yeah.
So, I was protected, very protected.
Oh, my goodness. So.
And, you know.
It's not for everyone.
And I subsisted on dark beer, which I thought was an iron source.
Right. Isn't it? No, I think it should just be vitamins.
Probably not.
Not an iron source. Okay. All right. You had to eat some pate or some liver.
Canned sardines went for about, you know, 15 cents a can.
Oh, my goodness.
That was something you could live on for a long time.
Wow. Okay. Michael, thank you for that question. Let's see here. This is from Cecily. I've been intermittent fasting for 12 to 16 hours a day. What hot drink is considered okay during the fast? Black coffee? Coffee with cream or almond milk? Tea? Any of those. But without the cream would be better.
Milk. Right, because you're breaking the fast when you have that.
You are. Because you're adding calories then.
Right.
Coffee black in and of itself just has insignificant amount of calories, so it wouldn't matter. But add cream to that, you're already adding 100 calories.
Yeah.
If it's a tablespoon
of cream.
It's like
so-called bulletproof coffee, where people they feel a bit of a boost from the fat. If they're on a ketogenic diet, they can have bulletproof coffee, and that gives them a little bit of a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fat. It's not like a sort of a phony high that you get from sugar. It's sort of slowly assimilated in the body.
Right.
But if you're really fasting, you're breaking the fast by taking in a calorie source.
Exactly. And with bulletproof coffee, if you're using, say, 2 tablespoons of coconut oil, it's about 110 calories a tablespoon.
Oh, is it?
So it's about 220 calories. And then some people are even adding another tablespoon of butter. I don't know how they do this. That's like a lube job for your insides after, you know.
Yeah.
That reminds me of my grandmother taking mineral oil for constipation.
Oh, see, there's something really interesting is that, what was it? This is an interesting sidelight. I'm sorry about the digression, but it reminds me of something. They recently did a study on Vascepa, okay?
Yeah.
And Vascepa was found to dramatically reduce the incidence of cardiovascular disease, which is interesting because when they do fish oil studies, well, they say fish oil, it doesn't really work that well. And many of the fish oil studies they do, they compare fish oil to olive oil. And that's been a criticism of the studies. It's like, well, olive oil is a little beneficial and fish oil is a little beneficial, so you're not going to see a difference. So really we need a placebo that's really inert.
Yes.
So what they did in the Vascepa study is they gave the people either fairly high dose, it's a synthetic fish oil, ethyl ester EPA, and the placebo was, like your grandmother, mineral oil.
Mineral oil.
Mineral oil. So what some of the critics of the study are saying is like, you shouldn't have used mineral oil, because of course there's an improvement. If you give mineral oil, it's not great. It depletes fat-soluble nutrients.
Wow.
It depletes fat-soluble nutrients as opposed to, because it competes with vitamins. It competes with even omega-3s, dietary omega-3s, and you know, vitamin D, vitamin A, K, and all those. And so, and so they challenged the results of that study. Meanwhile, that has become the basis for a huge uptick in the stock of Amarin, which makes this Vascepa, because it's like now considered medicine, and it's available by prescription. And now that form of fish oil, but oh, God forbid you use conventional fish oil, you know, that's been a real...
too bad.
You know, but...
And how much is it? It's expensive, too.
It's expensive, but on it with a if it's paid for by insurance, you don't see it that much.
Ah, okay.
It could be really like a kind of a very small copay, if you get it that way. But it's expensive to the insurance companies.
Yeah.
Somebody's paid for, or the government, you know, Medicare covers it.
Medicare covers it, right. Okay. Still goes back to the people paying for the insurance. Right. Anyway, so ultimately.
Somebody's paying for it. I mean, it's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Cecily, you can drink black coffee. You can also drink tea with nothing at all in it. Tea straight up. Black tea, green tea.
No tilk. And the other thing to mention is that you somewhat vitiate or spoil the benefits of tea when you mix it with milk. Because, you know, green tea or regular tea, that there's something about the binding of the milk constituents to the polyphenols that prevents their absorption. So I don't know if that's really been conclusively demonstrated with coffee. There are coffee benefits, but maybe only through black coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Meanwhile, the dentist will say, oh, you've got a lot of coffee and tea stains on your teeth. You should put milk in it to counteract.
Seriously?
You've heard that? Like drinking lemon water in our world is good for detoxification, but the dentist will say, that's a lot of acid for your teeth.
That's true.
Drink it through a straw might be something.
Yeah,
but
and lemonade is the worst.
Yeah.
Lemonade is a Trojan horse for sugar.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, just a way to ingest a lot of sugar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, because who takes, just squeezes lemon in water and that is tart.
Right,
whoa.
Right. Maybe
you put stevia in it or something like that.
Well, lemon, I like lemon in my seltzer.
Yeah, a little squeeze of lemon.
Lemon in my seltzer.
That's fine.
That's kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you for your questions, Cecily.
Okay, we have reached the point of no return on part one.
Okay.
That's all the time we have for part one, but we have a part two, and we'll continue answering questions in part two.
Mm-hmm.
So what's coming up in part two? Give us a preview.
Oh, I'd like to take choline to help lower my homocysteine.
This is the interesting question.
The very interesting question.
This person has this fish body odor syndrome.
Yes.
We'll investigate that in part two.
Mm-hmm.
That is a fascinating story, and we'll explain that in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Leyland. We'll be right back.